Welcome to the intermission portion of our Philadelphia Youth Orchestra concert today, and we have as our guest the music director of the Philadelphia Youth Orchestra, Louis Scaglione. Maestro Scaglione, welcome.
Thank you, Kevin.
It's an interesting program. Two quintessential American composers and one quintessential Russian composer. We began with music of Samuel Barber.
Yes, we do. I'll share with you the kind of the origin of this program. One of my former students and now wonderful colleagues, Francesca De Pasquale, who is the daughter of the late William De Pasquale of the Philadelphia Orchestra, and her mother, Gloria De Pasquale, who still plays in the Philadelphia Orchestra, cellist, was in the Philadelphia Youth Orchestra for several years. She was concertmaster also for a couple of years. One of the last things I did with Francesca in the Philadelphia Youth Orchestra was our tour back in 2007, where she was concertmaster of the orchestra on our tour to Brazil, but she was also soloist, and we performed the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto. We've done several concerti over the years, and she wrote to me last year and said she would very much like to do a concerto with PYO again. So I had asked her which one she would like to do, and she had on the list Shostakovich Violin Concerto Number 1. I had to take a moment because I know how difficult this concerto is, not only for the soloist, but also for the orchestra. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But I thought we should attempt the challenge. And so to build a program around it, I had noted that the piece was written in 1947. It was not premiered until much later in the following decade, but that it was written then. So I was looking at other pieces that were written around the same time, and I came across Sam Barber's Medea's Dance of Vengeance and Copland's Third Symphony. And what the neat thing about this program is that all three of these pieces that we're performing this afternoon were written within about 1 year of one another, albeit two American composers and one Russian composer. So I thought that was a neat aspect of this program and an interesting survey of how different three pieces can be, even though they were written in the same time, same period, right after World War II. Barber's work, The Dance of Vengeance, is an interesting work. It's not a happy piece by any means. The story is not one of those happy stories. But Barber was one of America's most distinguished composers of his generation, comparable to Benjamin Britten out of England. And he was, a young prodigal musician. He entered the Curtis Institute of Music as one of the school's first students at the age of 14. And after he finished Curtis in 1932, he embarked on his career as a composer. He wrote three operas, including Anthony and Cleopatra, which was commissioned for the opening of the Metropolitan Opera House. He wrote one ballet, one overture, two symphonies, concertos for piano and violin, three orchestral essays, and choral works, sonatas for violin, cello, and solo piano music, and songs. So he is noted as being one of our great American composers, perhaps not achieving the same level of notoriety or output as his contemporary in Aaron Copland, but certainly an important and distinguished American composer nonetheless. He wrote this piece. He had a great love of literature, and his compositions have been inspired by the writings of Mary Shelley, James Agee, Emily Dickinson, William Butler Yeats, James Joyce, and several others. So it was a piece that I thought it's not done often, but that one that allows many of my individual soloists within the orchestra, section leaders within the orchestra, to have moments. There's a lot of solo work that's done, whether it's the duet between the concertmaster and the first violist and then the principal second violin, or the hauntingly beautiful English horn solo that we heard. It's really a remarkably short little but powerful piece.
And speaking of soloists, Francesca De Pasquale in the Shostakovich Violin Concerto. How did that go for you to have an old alum perform with the PYO?
Well, she's just one of my most favorite people and brilliant musician. She just recently received an appointment, which she's starting in September, as on the violin faculty of the Oberlin Conservatory. And she's had such a distinguished career, and she's not quite 30 yet. And she continues to teach at the Rutgers University Mason Gross School of the Arts, and she's assistant violin faculty and also of chamber music for the Juilliard School pre-college program, amongst other things. And so to collaborate with her is really a treat for me. I think this is either the seventh or eighth concerto that I've done with Francesca. So I did one of her first violin concerto, full violin concerto with orchestra. I believe we did the Mendelssohn violin concerto when she was a young teenager. And each subsequent year and then many years in between, we have collaborated on other concerti as well. And it's always a treat for me because I just marvel as she continues to mature and her musicianship continues to blossom as she progresses down this wonderful path that she has ahead of her. But that this particular piece, the violin concerto, really is a piece that David Oestreich, who premiered, a very famous violinist of the 20th century, and one of my favorite, actually, who premiered the piece in 1955, explained that the concerto is a real challenge to the soloist. And these are his words. It may be likened to a Shakespearean role, demanding from the artist the greatest emotional and intellectual dedication. You can always sense the profoundest meditation on life, on the fate of mankind. It's a concerto that demands so much from the soloist emotionally. Again, another very emotional piece, like the barber Medea's Meditation, Dance of Vengeance, is a very emotional piece. This, too, is a very emotional piece in very different ways. And for the soloist, it's extraordinarily difficult. For the orchestra, it is equally as difficult. It is one of the more challenging, if not amongst the challenging orchestral accompaniments written for a concerto. It requires a great deal amount of focus and proficiency and dedication to really bring about the orchestral material in support of the solo material. You know, it really is a piece that Shostakovich chose not to premiere during Stalin's lifetime, so he waited until Stalin had died before he allowed the piece to be premiered. And also found interesting that he explains the inspiration. I'll share with you what Shostakovich had written about the inspiration behind the first violin concerto. And he had said that Jewish folk music has had a most profound impression on me. I never tire of delighting in it. It is multifaceted. It can appear to be happy while it is tragic. It's almost always laughter through tears. This is not purely a musical issue. This is also a moral issue. The Jews became the most persecuted and defenseless people of Europe during World War II. It was a return to the Middle Ages. Jews became a symbol for me. All of man's defenselessness was concentrated in them. After the war, I tried to convey that feeling in my music. So Jewish music is not specifically presented in this violin concerto. The work invokes the Jewish spirit in a general way, with the hints of ethical flavor, specifically in the second and final movement. So you heard, you know, this gamut of emotion and really intense. The first movement, just slow for a first movement. Typically, first movements have a little more tempo to it. But this is a very slow expression. And then you have Passacaglia, another Pasca. We heard of Passacaglia last week. But this week we hear one in this concerto. And for me, it's my favorite movement of the work because of its intensity. As a compositional form, I very much enjoy Passacaglias, especially when you think of music of Bach, when you think of Passacaglias, but that really interweaves through all of this emotion. And then the final movement with its burst of energy and joy is really a wonderful piece to put together. It was, we had very little time to put soloist with orchestra together. We had two rehearsals, and it's one that requires a few more rehearsals to really do it, but because of our schedules, we had limited time. And this concert was performed on February 23rd, only a few weeks before we went under lockdown. So we really, I think the students and solo, certainly the soloists, rose to the occasion, and it really turned to be a wonderful music experience for me, and as I know it was for the students as well.
And speaking of the lockdown, we touched on it last week about how it affects the Philadelphia Youth Orchestra. And I think you missed a big tour to Greece because of this.
Yes. Yeah, so back on March 13th, we had to suspend all rehearsals, concerts, and classes for the, and what turned out now turning out to be for the season, including our annual festival concert where we typically do at the end of the season as the capstone of the season, and we'll not be able to perform the Beethoven Ninth Symphony that we originally had scheduled to do as part of our 80th anniversary year. And we were also scheduled to go on tour to Greece, which would have been our first tour in 13 years, performing at 5 different international music festivals throughout Greece. It was by invitation, and unfortunately we had to cancel this program, hopefully to be rescheduled for June of 2021 and reassemble the type of concert schedule that we otherwise had to give up in Greece. So it was, I was very crestfallen, as were all of the students. So we had an orchestra of 86 students going to present works by Tchaikovsky and Weber and Brahms. So hopefully we'll be able to resurrect this project for next year when things are safer to get back on the road.
Now, in the second part of this program, we are going to hear a final symphony of Aaron Copland, his final, written in the mid-1940s, as you said, the same as The Barber and the Shostakovich. And what can you tell us about the third symphony of Aaron Copland?
Well, Aaron Copland, as I mentioned, is probably the most celebrated and revered of all of the American composers of the 20th century. I think when you say Aaron Copland, his name is synonymous with American music, or at least what has been thought of as characteristically American music of the time. And really even more than perhaps George Gershwin or Leonard Bernstein, both of his contemporaries. That Copland had a unique sense of being able to capture an America through his music before the World Wars, an America before it really lost its innocence, and an America that represented a very real sense of opportunity. By comparison, Bernstein, I always think, really pictured America after the Great Wars. So if you think of Copland capturing America before the Great War, World War II, and Bernstein capturing a picture of America after World War II, more through music, Bernstein would focus on an experienced and cynical America divided along racial, religious, and political lines. Well, Copland didn't really focus on that. Focused on other things. So Copland really learned to develop his own voice, and you can certainly hear of all of his music, if you were to drop the needle, like we used to do in graduate school, drop the needle and identify the piece. Copland certainly developed his own very unique voice. And then, he was a composer who came of age during technological advances. So he kind of straddled the ability to permanently record live sound and broadcast it on the airwaves. And he really changed the composer's, I would say that ability to broadcast over the sound waves changed the composer's way of listening to and ultimately composing music. Copland perhaps is the first major composer who finally realized and appreciated the element of the listener and the audience beyond the concert hall. But the third symphony, when we think of Copland's output, we think of two big pieces: Fanfare for the Common Man, which is in the last movement of this symphony, and of course is Lincoln Portrait. which we have been narrated many, many times by great luminaries of the past century in film and TV world, and it often is done at times of patriotic affairs or series, but that the Fanfare for the Common Man, which was written as a commission by the Cincinnati Symphony and Eugene Goossens in 1943. Eugene Goossens, who was the conductor of the Cincinnati Symphony, commissioned 18 different fanfares as part of the war effort. Copland, in addition to Paul Creston and Moulton Gould and Howard Hanson and Walter Piston, Virgil Thompson, amongst others, many of the great American composers of the early and mid-20th centuries, including Copland, were commissioned to write these fanfares as part of that world effort. So Fanfare of the Common Man was born. The Third Symphony was a culmination of Copland's response to America in World War II. This response was his Third Symphony. More or less reads like a great American novel, this symphony does. It's a great American symphony, really. So, as Copland explained, and I'll read a little something that he said about his own Third Symphony. Copland said that the Third Symphony contains no folk or popular material. Any reference to either folk material or jazz was purely unconscious. However, I do borrow from myself by using the Fanfare for the Common Man in an expanded and reshaped form in the final movement. I use this opportunity to carry the fanfare material further and to satisfy my desire to give the Third Symphony an affirmative tone. After all, it was a wartime piece, or more accurately, an end-of-wartime piece, intended to reflect the euphoric spirit of the country at the time. And certainly, the ending of this symphony evokes an euphoric spirit. Putting this symphony together, it is perhaps among all of the symphonies or symphonic works, it is perhaps amongst the most challenging. The writing is brilliant, but he does require a lot of interesting rhythms to be executed by instrumentalists that are not idiomatic of those instruments. He requires a lot of playing from brass. You'll hear great brass writing in this. It takes a lot of stamina, concentration, and dedication to playing this symphony from the beginning to the very end. It's a long blow, as they often say, it's a long play. And you have to be careful how you pace yourself throughout this, especially as a young musician. So putting this together focused on a lot of areas of musicianship and musical technique that students really needed to focus on. And as I said of the process with this entire program, the Barber, the Shostakovich, and the Copland, that my students will emerge from this concert and this process much better musician for having done this music. And I think, in fact, they were. You know, not everything, and we have to remind ourselves that these are mostly high school students playing this music. The average age of this orchestra is 17, and we have to be mindful that this music that would challenge even the most brilliant and most professional of orchestras in the professional orchestra world, that they presented this performance, I think, very admirably, and my goal for them learning and becoming better musicians in the process, I think, was achieved. So it was a work that I thoroughly enjoyed putting together. It was the first time that I conducted this particular piece. And so whenever you do something for the first time, you continually learn as you're doing it. And at the end of the process, I know I certainly learned a great deal and I feel that my level of musicianship was also notched up one, at least. And I think for my students, they learned a tremendous deal from performing this wonderful music.
Well, we look forward to hearing the Third Symphony of Aaron Copland in the second half of our program. Again, thank you very much, Maestro Louis Scaglione, for being our guest today.
Thank you, Kevin, very much, and thank you to our listeners at WRTI.